verses 13 through 18. Paul writes, "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. For this we declare to you by a word from the Lord, that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, with the voice of an archangel, and with the sound of the trumpet of God. And the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will always be with the Lord. Therefore, encourage one another with these words." This is the word of the Lord. You know, are you afraid of dying? I know that's not an encouraging question, but, you know, death for some is it's the great intimidator. You know, as death marches closer, it brings about a soberness. It brings with it that soberness and gives us perspective on life. And many of us have had loved ones that have died. And some of you have even had these brushes with death. Maybe it was through an illness, or you were in a car accident, or some other type of circumstance. And so death, for many of us, is like a pickpocket in a crowded square that brushes up against you and causes you to take a step back and feel around and grasp for those things that are important to you, lest they be taken away. And so it brings about a soberness and perspective. And you know the feeling when something has been taken from you. And you know that feeling when you've been separated from someone you love. And I've attended many funerals, and perhaps you have as well. But from my memory, I cannot think of a funeral that I've attended that was for a non-Christian, or it was performed by someone who was not a Christian. In other words, I've only been to Christian funerals that I can remember that were conducted by a Christian pastor or clergyman. And so I don't have an experience with being in the midst of a non-Christian funeral, but I am familiar with one that occurred just over a year ago. The man's name was Christopher Hitchens, and he was a very intelligent and very gifted man. And in his final years while battling cancer, he wrote, "The cause of my life has been that of combating superstition. And part of that was Christianity." And he was a very outspoken atheist, or his wife would say that he referred himself to himself as an anti-theist. And so when he died, his memorial service was void of any supernatural reference or implication. And his hope was basically that there was nothing to hope for. That was his hope. And the young poet, Dylan Thomas, in his poem entitled, "Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night," I think captures what most who are at best are skeptical about life after death, and maybe at worst who are antagonistic against it, against that idea. It sums up quite well how they view life. Dylan Thomas writes in his poem, "Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning they, do not go gentle into that good night. Good men, the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight, and learned too late they grieve it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. grave men near death who see with blinding sight. Blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my Father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And this poem tells us that we need to fight against death and try to keep it at bay, which is very different from what the Apostle Paul tells those who are followers of Christ and even what he says about himself. Paul says, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. He says, O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? And that's quite a contrast to Thomas and Hitchens. And so that brings us back to the question, you know, what happens when we die? Surely this is a question that has been asked since the beginning. It's asked by those who follow Christ. It's asked by those who are not Christians. And it's no doubt a question that you've asked. And it's a question that those Thessalonian Christians 2,000 years ago asked the Apostle Paul. And specifically they were asking, what happens to those Christians who die before Christ returns? And a follow-up question would be, I think they were thinking about and asking, is how should we who are still living, how should we respond to the death of those who are close to us who have faith in Jesus Christ? And these were the questions on the table. And Paul responds first by telling them that death should not be the death of hope. Listen to what he says in verses 13 and 14. He says, but we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. You see, hopelessness stems from being uninformed. In other words, if you are uncertain about your future, it's going to create in you despair, not hope. And so Paul says, you need to be informed. You don't need to be uninformed. Because you have a reason. You have a reason to have hope. To have this confident assurance about what's going to happen to you when you die. He tells us that our hope is solely linked to Jesus and what He has done and what He will do. He tells us that Jesus has died and Jesus has been raised from the dead. And therefore, resurrection should inform our grief. And notice that Paul, he expects grief to be present. He doesn't say as Christians we don't grieve. He just says that our grief should be experienced along with a hope that is grounded in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And even Paul's terminology as he broaches this subject is informed by the resurrection. He says that those who have faith in Christ that have died are asleep. Now, why does he use that term? I think he uses that term for two reasons. One, sleep is used because of the stillness of the body. That stillness is the same type of stillness that is observed in sleep, at least in many of us. Now, one of my children, when she sleeps, she's anything but still. I mean, she's all over the place. But I think, generally speaking, when you sleep, you are still. And so, Paul refers to being to death of the body as being still, being asleep. And the second reason he uses this term sleep to refer to death is because when the Christian dies, their body is laid to rest only temporarily. And just as sleep is a temporary state, and so death, in death, the body goes into a temporary state awaiting the return of Jesus Christ. He says in verse 14, for since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep. So just as you awoke this morning from your sleep, those who are dead in Christ, their bodies, when Christ returns, will be awakened, they will be raised, and they will be renewed. And on a side note, that's why we call the place where we bury the body, we call it a cemetery, which means a sleeping place. And so although death brings about separation and grief, it should not bring about hopelessness, at least for the Christian. And Paul continues, and he tells us that when Christ returns, that both Christians that are living as well as the Christians that have died will be with him always. And he assures the Thessalonians that if you have faith in Christ, whether you are living when he returns or if you died before he comes, you will not miss out on anything. But you will be a full participant in what Christ does when he returns. Listen to what Paul says in verses 15 through 18. He says, "For this we declare to you by a word from the Lord, that we are who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, with the voice of an archangel, and with the sound of the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will always be with the Lord." I would imagine some of you still use alarm clocks to wake up in the morning. Unfortunately, I use one. You know, alarm clocks are, it's one of those necessary instruments, I guess you'd say, that you need to, you know, make sure you get up at a good time in the morning so you can be awake and you can get going on time. Well, Paul says that the Lord himself would descend from heaven with a cry of command, with the voice of an archangel, and the sound of the trumpet of God. Now, today, personally, I don't really care for alarm clocks because they interrupt my sleep. But on this day, there will be an alarm that will go throughout all the earth that will literally wake the dead. And it will be a joyous sound, which you normally don't think of as being tied to an alarm clock. It's not very joyous, but this one will be, at least for those who are in Christ. And there will be no desire to hit the snooze button when this alarm goes off. And he says, "And when this alarm sounds, the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air." And so those of us who are alive when Christ returns will be caught up with those who have died in Christ, and we will meet the Lord in the air. Now, this phrase "caught up" is where we get the term, many of you may be familiar with it, it's called the rapture. And it communicates a violent, sudden, taken out or shift, okay? And so what Paul is saying is when Christ returns, this is going to be a very quick process. All this is going to happen very quickly. And then he goes on to say that we will be taken up to meet the Lord in the air. And this word that he uses there, as we meet the Lord in the air, is used in this type of context in the first century. This word "meet." It would be the same as if we were to explain, I could explain it this way to you. Let's say the President of the United States is coming to visit Augusta. And so he flies into the Atlanta airport, gets in his motorcade, and begins to make his way to Augusta. Well, then all the city leaders of Augusta, including our governor, our mayor, maybe others, they would go out, and maybe they would go to Thompson or Grovetown off I-20 and meet up with the president before he gets to Augusta. And as they meet up with him, then they would escort him into the city. And so this word can refer to this idea of the dead in Christ being raised, those who are alive when Christ returns being gathered together with Christ, and we will escort Christ to the earth as He establishes fully His kingdom in this place. And then Paul uses one of my favorite phrases in this short passage, verse 17, toward the end. He says, "And so we will always be with the Lord." And he uses this prepositional phrase in this way three times in this passage. The first one is in verse 14 when he says that Jesus will bring with him the dead in Christ. They will be with him. And then in verse 17, in the first part of 17, he says, those who are alive will be caught up with them. Meaning, those who are alive when Christ returns will be caught up with those who have died in Christ. There will be this reunion of the people of God. And then lastly, at the end of verse 17, he says that all those who have faith in Jesus will be with the Lord always, never to be separated again. And then he establishes their hope and he challenges them by saying, therefore, encourage one another with these words. And so we can encourage one another by reminding one another that the death of Christ put to death our hopelessness. And as followers of Christ, we do not have to rage against the dying of the light. But rather, those who are in Christ are currently and will always be in the light, because Christ is the light of the world. So in both this life and the next, we will always be with Christ. He will always be with us. And therefore, let us encourage one another with these words. And Jesus gives us another tangible way to encourage one another with these words, with this idea, with the benefits and the blessing that comes through the death and resurrection of Christ. And it is the Lord's Supper. And so let's prepare ourselves now as we go before the Lord with the Lord's Supper.